Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua. Good morning.
Good morning. That's right. It's we're up early for California, but that's all right because it's worth it because the amazing one half of the Jersey Ghouls herself, Miss Jackie, is here. We're so excited to see you. It's been too long. Hi.
It has. Hello, spooky friends. I am super, super excited because it has. It has been far, far too long. You know, there's been a little chat on Facebook. There's been a little chat in our creeps group, but to actually see your faces, it is quite lovely, even via Zoom, to see you guys again. And thank you. I'm super, super excited to be here.
Yay. It's so good to see you.
I just want to sit here and just look at you. Like, know, look, there she
stare.
Is.
Let's just have a friendly stare.
Stare at each other. I mean, you know, I also was just like completely delighted to see Jake Gyllenhaal's in the chat again. Like,
there we go.
Jake returns. I've still never changed it. It's sadly, I don't know, maybe it's not sad, but like I've had like professional meetings with people. Like I have meetings with a dietitian and we do it via Zoom. And I didn't even think about changing my name because when I go on Zoom, Jake Gyllenhaal goes on Zoom and I didn't even think of it. And it took like three sessions. And then she was like, so your name is different. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to roll with it. I'm not even going to hide behind the fact that like, I can't take life seriously. So yeah. Hi, Jake Gyllenhaal. How you doing?
Yes.
It might be a different name on my insurance card, but that's fine. It'll all wash out and you know, it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
When I'm on Zoom, I identify as Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, I like this. I like contextual identities, you know, a TED Talk that I'm going to bring to you in 2024. There's got to be more to that, right, Joe? Like, you've heard that, like contextual identities.
I've never heard that before. I don't know. I'm not in a master's program, Joshua, so.
Oh, you're going to throw that in my face.
Yes.
No, that's supposed. It's supposed to be the other way around. I'm supposed to throw that in people's faces, but I don't. I'm too fucking tired to try to make people feel bad that they don't, that they're not in this program. From all the reading, my brain is like, you know. But
see, reading is bad. Reading is bad. Watching is good. I'm kidding.
The good thing is though, yeah, it's like, I always have space for horror. And in fact, I'm infecting like my whole program with like horror knowledge. Like last week we sat around and we talked about, I don't even know how it came up, but like, I don't know these people. They're not actually in my classes. They're part of a different cohort, but some of the classes, the way it's structured, because people are all in different programs. I'm on a 2-year track, like an accelerated track. Other people are on a 3, some people are on a 4. So we're in some classes with people that have already been there like for a few semesters because of their track. So they're not even people I have classes with, but we were just sitting around chatting. And all of a sudden we were in this like deep conversation about Get Out and horror and all this stuff. And they're like, we've never thought about it this way. I'm like, I got a show for you.
My time has come.
Yeah. So it just keeps happening because then other people, because the program is so small that other people talk, you know? So of course it's like, oh, you're the guy, you like horror, right? And then all of a sudden I'm in another deep conversation about, you know, horror films. So I mean,
it's like, oh, it's you're the spooky queer. Yes, you're the one.
Oh.
Right. Exactly. But you know, we didn't come here to talk about me. We do that on all the other episodes. Jackie, what's been new with you? What's going on? What's happening?
You know what? I wish that I had some more exciting stories, but I'm just adulting, you know, going to work. And, I think I've said it before that like in my free time, just trying to fill my free time with things that make me happy. You know, it's like,
I love that.
I have, you know, I have a couple different hobbies. Obviously I am a bookworm and an avid reader. So I spend as much time as possible consuming that. I like podcasting, so I have a couple of podcasts, so I spend my time doing that. So yeah, really just mostly posting pictures of my dog on Instagram. Like that's just, it's just the things that make me happy. That's what I'm doing. So aside from the boring regular adult stuff that we all have to do. Just, you know, trying to be a good person, make myself smile, make everybody else smile. The usual.
I love that.
Things that everybody wants. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, so that is, of course, the Jersey Ghouls and the List We Missed, where you watch films that you didn't see when they first came out. Or is that like, how exactly do you describe?
Yeah, so with
what's your elevator pitch?
The elevator. So here it is. So it's me and one of my best friends, AJ. So part of the dynamic of the show is we have a male and female best friends situation. There's also a 10-year age gap between us. And our tagline is that we finally watch the films that everyone else already has. The whole concept, the where we got our name from, is that, you know, you're sitting around talking with friends and somebody starts talking about, I don't know, Citizen Kane. And you're like, oh, I have never seen Citizen Kane. And then they do that. Oh, you have never seen Citizen Kane, but you watch movies. You have eyeballs. How have you not seen Citizen Kane? And it's the same thing that we all say, where it's like, oh, you know what? You know, I'll put that on the list and I'll watch it. And let's be real. We never watch it. We never go back to that list. Fuck that list. We just say it to be polite and placate our friends that have, like, you know, pick your mouth up off the floor. So, yeah. So we have compiled a list of there's so many lists or so many movies on the list at this point. We basically went back about like 40 years and we looked up, you know, the top grossing films of the year, the blockbusters, the cult classics, everything that we haven't seen, because between AJ and I mean, you know me, I'll just continuously watch Con Air every single day. And I'm perfectly fine skipping out on all sorts of movies to just watch Nicolas Cage. And AJ will just sit there and he'll just watch the Lego movie and Avatar The Last Airbender. And so we finally decided, you know, we're going to be grownups and we are going to go back and rectify and watch. And it's been really fun. We are in season two. We have about 25-ish episodes and we have watched, you know, things like Taxi Driver, Slumdog Millionaire. For some reason, we keep watching a lot of Leonardo DiCaprio movies, which I don't mind, but AJ is not a big fan of Leonardo DiCaprio. So, but some we've really liked, some we really haven't liked. I've been surprised by things. I really thought that I would enjoy When Harry Met Sally because we'd never seen that. And I was like, you know what? I'm here for Billy Crystal. Like, give me a good 80s Billy Crystal. And I ended up really, really disliking When Harry Met Sally. But it's also given me like a weird love of Quentin Tarantino. I've never really been a huge fan. I would tell people that I like Reservoir Dogs and that's it. But we've watched some movies and Quentin Tarantino and I've really enjoyed them. And I'm like kind of going back and watching some and actually the next episode of Jersey Ghouls that come out, we are going to do another Tarantino episode. So I'm very excited because I've been surprisingly enjoying him, which I never thought I would say, but yes. Yeah, so with the list we missed, the second and the fourth Sundays of every month, we're coming out with movies that we're finally catching up with everybody else.
Hey, I love that. You know, you mentioned Nicolas Cage. I know you're a fan. It must be the last couple of years. It must be so like satisfying to be a Nicolas Cage fan because like his whole career has had this like bizarre indie renaissance and everybody's like, wow, why did we like hate this guy for all that? You know, I mean, in mainstream like conversations, yeah. I'm seeing a lot more love for Nicolas Cage than I think we've seen in a long time.
It's like finally everyone is like, because everyone's, he's weird. He's a weird guy. He's like a weird method actor. He's a strange man. He takes strange roles. But for some reason now, like I don't want to say we, because I've always, but like mainstream is like accepting the weird. They were like, okay, that's your thing. We're going to latch on to it. I mean, with I never get the title right. The Unbearable Weight of a Massive Talent. Like,
oh yeah.
That's him being super weird and everybody loving him being super weird. And I'm like, I told you guys, like, I'm like, not to be all history, but like, I've told you guys, he's super fun. Like, you can't look at Nicolas Cage and expect Sidney Poitier level performance. Like, it's Nick Cage. Like, let's look at the Nick Cage canon. It's Nick Cage. Like, please just accept it for what it is and enjoy it. Like, not everything has to have layers. Sometime we can enjoy just the package and
it can just be. It can just be.
It can just be. And if nothing else, it has led me to Etsy far too many times for Nicolas Cage merchandise. So,
well, but that's the thing. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but that Pig movie, everybody was like talking about, you know, mm-hmm. and that it is this like incredible performance that shouldn't, you know, be possible, I guess, but it is, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I really love that. I love when like, you know, somebody goes through like a time where everybody's like, oh, you know, I hate you or you're garbage. And then they have like this renaissance where people reevaluate, you know, there's lots, obviously a lot of movies we love go through those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we just have to give it time before people are like, oh yeah, that is a great movie. Or yeah, obviously actors, music, you know, lots of things where sometimes it just takes time. So it's just been really interesting. I just have to think that all the Nicolas Cage fans that I know, and I know quite a few, must just feel really like vindicated. Yeah. on the opposite note, you just went and saw Pearl Jam, right? Not too long ago. Yeah, how was that show?
Oh, such a
they play show. Like forever, right? They play big set lists.
Oh, they do. It was great. So they were scheduled to play, I think, like the official schedule said they were supposed to go on at like 8:45, I think. And they rolled out a little after 9 and they start playing a couple songs. And at some point they literally were like, hey, we're sorry that we came out late. But don't worry. We have already paid the violation fee for the curfew and we're going to keep on keeping on. Wow. I mean, famously there was a show they did. I think it was, and I can't remember if it was 2003, maybe. Might have been 2008. I don't remember which tour, but they played out in State College, Pennsylvania for about 3 hours. Like this, it was just a monster show. But no, it was super fun. It was emotional. The energy was fantastic. And it was an all around good show. I have thus far in my 30 plus times seeing them have not had a bad time. So knock on wood that, you know, it just keeps on being good. But it's one of the, I think since the pandemic started, it's only the second show I've been back to. Marissa and I went to see the New Kids on the Block mixtape tour over 4th of July weekend. And that was the first show since the pandemic happened. And that was insane because we were right up close to the stage. And I was like, I will marry you, Rick Astley. Absolutely. Let's get married. Let's do this. and I swear Jordan Knight smiled at me. He looked at me. We made eye contact. We had a moment and he smiled at me and I was like, yeah, but Rick Astley, but no. So this Pearl Jam show was only the second live show that I've seen. And it was very important to me. Like I said, I've seen them so many times and every time it's a fantastic experience. So, and this time the venue they were at is one that I've been going to since I was in high school. It has changed names 1,000 times because whatever bank owns it me and my friends, we still call it the Tweeter Center because that's what it was called when we were in high school. I think it's now called the Freedom Mortgage Pavilion. It's the Camden Waterfront. It's a wonderful outdoor venue. And it was an absolutely beautiful, beautiful night. It was, you know, you're sitting right there, the water's there, you look over, you get the Philly skyline. Yeah, it was a fantastic show.
That makes me so happy. Oh, sorry, Joe, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say that I was just going to go backtrack a little bit because your posts from the mixtape tour were my favorite thing. I listened to a show on a podcast called Troubled Waters with Dave Holmes, and Dave Holmes went to the mixtape tour and he talked about how awesome it was and how it was like a concert experience that he couldn't have ever anticipated because it felt like you were listening to a mixtape, how they were able to mm-hmm. weave everything through. And so like seeing that play out also in your posts from that and just the blast that you two looked like, it was like the most fun, like post vaccination, like summer, like joy that I saw online. So I just want to say that I was like so happy when you were posting all of that.
And I'll tell you, that was like last minute spontaneous. It was 4th of July weekend and I'm all set to go to my aunt and uncle's house for the 4th of July party that I do every year. And Marissa calls me. She's like, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, well, I'm going to my aunt and uncle's now, but other than that. And she's like, you want to go see New Kids in Atlantic City? And I was like, oh, yes. And she's like, these tickets fell in my lap. She's like, general admission, tickets fell in my lap. Like, we, it's funny that Marissa and I are really not one for like the spontaneity. Like, we generally were like planners. And she's like, dude, fuck it, let's just go. And I'm like, okay, fuck it, let's go. And we kind of just made our plans. I did go to my family's barbecue for a bit, but I was like, sorry guys, I can't stick around. I'm going to see New Kids. And I peaced out. And yeah, it was, I mean, it was well worth the nightmare of getting home, because I only live about an hour from Atlantic City. And I think it took us that long to get out of the parking garage.
Oh, shit.
But you know what? We had fun, because we just rolled the windows down. We put on an 80s playlist from Spotify, and we just sang to the entire parking garage. So we had a good time.
Oh, you're those people. I love that when we get, I love that you talk about is it like an amphitheater that you were at? The one that changed name, the one that you went to when you were in high school?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The one in Camden. Oh, okay. Yeah. It has like the, you know, there's the seats and it has the cover over the, you know, roof over the seats. And then the lawn is super wide open. And actually over the years they've added like the concessions in the back now. And when I was in high school, we used to go and just, you know, get the cheap ass $20 lawn seats for whatever show we felt like going to see. And we would go and we would sit up against the back wall, because then you'd have a little support. Although now you can rent chairs. Like, they've made it, you know, they've made it nicer. You can get wine if you want to be so fancy to drink wine at a Pearl Jam show. I mean, Eddie drinks wine at the Pearl Jam
show.
The bottle of red wine is a staple. And it's funny, my brother was in a Pearl Jam tribute band, and he always did if Eddie did it, my brother did it. So he would have his bottle of red wine that he would put right next to his fucking Bud Light. And
that's so sweet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we have like similar here. So in Chula Vista, there is a, when it opened, it was called the Coors Amphitheater. And it became the Cricket Wireless Amphitheater. Then it was Sleep Train Mattress. And then it was Mattress Firm. And now it's the North Island Credit Union Amphitheater. Mm-hmm. But we all just call it the Chula Vista Amphitheater. Like, I don't know anybody who's ever really called it whatever it is. We're always like, oh, we're going to go see a show in Chula Vista at the amphitheater. And then everybody knows. But they kind of have the same thing where it's like, you know, there's a grass area. Now there's concessions. But I think it kind of started similarly to what you're saying. Just like a venue. But it just keeps changing.
It's really nice. It does. Yeah. Like I said, anybody that's like around my age, anybody that's somewhere between like 45 and probably like 38, like it's the Tweeter Center. Cause that's what it was when we were in high school. And it's just, and it's funny because I got an email, you know, leading up to the show, just reminding you about, you know, bag size and don't bring blankets and don't bring chairs and rent them. And the emails will come from, I think it was like Freedom Mortgage Pavilion, formerly the BTT Amphitheater. Yeah. Like it's just, it's had so many names, and it's just, guys, you either call it the Tweeter Center or it's the Camden Waterfront. Like, just say you're going to see a show at the Camden Waterfront. And you know what it means, because the Camden Waterfront has a couple of, like, it has our aquarium. I think there's one of the big battleships there, and then there's the concert venue. So just, you're going to the Camden Waterfront. Everybody knows what it means.
I just love that's got to be a thing in every state and every city that has like a big, you know, because that's what happens. It changes all the time. I mean, there's a whole history that I just looked up for the Chula Vista Amphitheater, because it's like, I wonder what it started as. And, you know, it changes all the time. And even like the entertainment now, like they did, Joe, I don't know when the last time you were there, but I was just there to see, I saw the Chicks, and there was something else we just went to see. Oh my God. We go to so many concerts. I forget. We're going to be there Sunday night for,
Iron Maiden.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, what was my point? Oh, just that it changes a lot. Anyways, that everybody, that's just a thing. Oh, I remember the entertainment is now like brought to you by Sequan Casino. They put a big like Sequan sticker on the wall. So it's like North Island Credit Union Amphitheater presented by Sequan Casino.
I did when we were there, I noticed that it's the Freedom Mortgage Pavilion. Yeah. But when you go in, I noticed like a ton of like Mattress Warehouse, like just I didn't even say like presented by or what. There was just big signs for Mattress Warehouse everywhere. And I'm like, okay, like just, that's fine. Just give me the music. Like that's, here's my too much money for a too big drink. So that's fine. Let's just. Okay. I did. I felt like they had, they have like, you know, the, I'm sure your amphitheater has the same thing where you can't have bottles, nothing glass. So they sell cans of everything.
Yeah.
And my friend and I that went, she wanted to grab a beer and I'm like, okay, they've got White Claws. Like I said, it's a beautiful night. We had just come from dinner. I'm like, I've got a full belly. I can handle a drink and not, you know, feel sick or anything. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take a, you know, black cherry White Claw. So they hand me like the 24 ounce, like monster bottle of White Claw. And I was like, okay, well, this is going to be, I'm going to take a while. Like it felt ridiculous in my hand. Like I felt so small because I'm used to the little White Claws, the skinny.
Yeah,
White Claw.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
was
yeah.
a 24 ounce. This was like a two hander. I was like, I should. And of course,
like by a the big time gulp of White Claw.
It was like, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for the big gulp of White Claw. I mean, it was tasty, but honestly, by the time I got to the bottom of it, like it had taken me so long to drink it. I'm like, well, this is warm. I'm like, this really isn't fun anymore, but
that happened to me. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, that happened to me at the Hollywood Bowl. So that's another big like amphitheater, very famous. You know, the Doors have like a film mm-hmm. that they recorded there. I'm sure you've heard of the Hollywood Bowl. Mm-hmm. And they, I went to get some wine and I didn't realize they were only selling it by the bottle, but they don't give you the bottle. So the guy, and he didn't even really tell me. I was like, you know, I'll have a glass of Pinot Noir, you know? And so he like turns around to like get it. And then he turns around, he had taken this giant plastic cup and just poured the whole bottle of wine into it. And that's what he sold me. And I was like, okay. I was like, what's happening here? And he's like, well, it's a bottle. They weren't selling it by the glass. It was, you had to buy the whole bottle, but they couldn't give you the bottle. It was insane. I'm like, but it's just me. What am I going to do with this? So I'm like walking around and thankfully I kind of made friends, you know, with the women's seated next to me. This was for the Garbage Alanis Morissette show. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, great time to get white girl wasted on wine, of course. Yeah. So I was just like, you want some wine? Like they give this big fucking plastic, big gulp basically of red wine. So, but I ended up drinking most of it myself, I'll be honest. And I thankfully was at a hotel in walking distance. So I just made my way back to the bedroom and or to the hotel room and crashed out. But yeah. Oh, good times, youth. Mm-hmm. Are trying to be youthful in our dotages, right? In our dowries. oh my gosh, it's so good to catch up with you. Yeah, it's just so lovely. So let's take a quick break and we will be right back to dive into Ghostbusters. Yay! 1984. Don't get it twisted.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, ugh, the practical effects. and also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males. Hi-o!
From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
All right, welcome back. So I'm so excited because October 2022, y'all, our Halloween series, our, you know, spooky season, we've decided to devote to films that, you know, aren't necessarily horror, but they have elements of horror. We saw them as kids. We love them as children. And we, you know, we carry the flame for them now, you know, gateway horror, if you will, horror for kids, you know, at horror for kids on Twitter, actually follow them. They're delightful. Yeah, that's kind of what we're talking about. So today we have, again, the lovely Jackie, who is a Ghostbusters aficionado. I think that's fair.
Given, super fan. I don't know if I can tell you every detail, but do I watch it way too much? Can I say every line as I watch it? Annoyingly, yes, I can. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. It was funny. One of the things, there was a MTV article, 103 greatest lines from Ghostbusters. I'm like, is that just the whole script? Like 103 lines? It's like, that's a lot. But that's okay. We, you know, no judgment. Anyways, but yes, this delightful film, 1984, you know, it's got everybody. It's again, another one of those, everybody's in this. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis. Oh my gosh, I'm doing exactly what the Ghostbusters stuff does. They always leave him out.
Ernie Hudson.
Shit, his name just left me. Ernie Hudson, thank you. Oh my God.
Wow, Joshua. Wow.
So racist. Yes, Ernie Hudson. You know, Annie Potts, who I just love. I mean, so many people. Also, my favorite name in this whole thing is Slavica Joven or Slavica Hoven, the woman who plays Gozer, although voiced by somebody called Patty Edwards, but still, Slavica. That's a great name. Anyways, you know, it's about a ragtag team of like scientists and, you know, buddies who decide they're going to like fight paranormal activity. In 1984, New York. Joe, do you have a memory of ever seeing this for the first time?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Wonderful. Then that's where we'll start.
I have a very clear memory, actually, of seeing the Ghostbusters. So, like many kids who had, like many middle-class children who had multiple televisions in the house, there was one weekend that was like HBO free weekend. And it happened to be in October. And so they were playing like different scary, quote unquote, scary movies. And I remember it was HBO free weekend and I watched, I like came in to Ghostbusters when like Rick Moranis is having his party. he's like having the party. Like it's like towards the end of the film, right? And then I couldn't stop watching because it was just like, you know, cutting back and forth and everything. And then there was like, you know, a little bit of sexy stuff with Sigourney Weaver. And I just like, what the heck is going on? And then it was at the beginning of the weekend. And so I remember catching it from the beginning, like later that weekend, and watching the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. I have a nasty habit, or at least when I was a kid, I had a nasty habit of like turning a movie on and coming in right when things are really good and then going back and watching it from the beginning much later and being like, oh, I'm so glad I came in because when I know it's good, because otherwise I would have been bored to tears before that. And so not that this happened with Ghostbusters by any means, but just it was just one of those things where it's like it was just a pattern always coming in the middle. In medias res for people who are in theater and literature. Ghostbusters. And it was a lot. I remember thinking it was a lot of fun. I remember not being scared by it at all, but just thinking it was just this silly, goofy, fun time. And yeah, so that's my very clear memory of the first time I've seen Ghostbusters. I can never remember how old I was because all of that's just kind of a blur, but I remember sitting in like my room and like it had a TV and I was like in my bunk bed on the bottom bunk and I had put like a bunch of stuff around to form like curtains and like watching the like had my own little cinematic viewing experience. Yeah.
Wow. That I'm was actually also surprised that
go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I'm surprised that there weren't elements of it that scared you. Cause I do think like, you know, some people remember seeing, you know, like some of the like the dead walking around and, you know, some of the especially later in the film, there's some like, you know, horrifying elements for like kids who may not yet have like a, you know, a construct for that. So that's very interesting, Joe. You continue to fascinate me.
Well, you know? That was like the weekend, like that was that HBO free weekend. I also remember, I believe it was like watching Clue and watching Gattaca. Gattaca was out. The Devil's Advocate. But like that one we watched with my parents. I like walked in. I remember like they were watching it and I like walked in. I don't know if it was actually, I don't know if Devil's Advocate was a free weekend thing or if it was a rental from our movie place, but I just remember walking in in the like them watching The Devil's Advocate, and it's when like Charlize Theron is in the church and she's like all like cut up all over her naked body. Yeah. And remember thinking like, what is going on? I see breasts. I need to leave.
I was like, when you talk about watching it with your family, I'm like, really? The Devil's Advocate was like, guys, Sunday night movie.
We're going to watch her Sunday night movie. I mean, you know, we were a Catholic household. So, you know, we knew that the devil couldn't get us. But yeah.
To no one's surprise, my family did watch The Devil's Advocate together. that was intentional. all right, Jackie, please tell us about your experience with Ghostbusters, you know, because I love you've got all the Funko Pops and, you know, figures in the background here. I know, again, visual media that podcasting is, although if you're following us on Patreon, you can see our faces. But tell us the love of Ghostbusters. The love of
so for me, so when the original came out, I was just about turning 3 years old. So really no concept in the beginning, but luckily I had an older brother who was 6 years older than me. So he was very much into Ghostbusters. Honestly, I think that I probably watched the real Ghostbusters cartoon before I actually saw the Ghostbusters movie. And then right around the time when Ghostbusters 2 was going to come out in theaters, my family, we're going to take a family trip. We're all going to go to the movies to see Ghostbusters 2. And I was like, okay, well, I want to see Ghostbusters 1. So probably around the age of like 7, I think, I finally see the movie. Love the movie. I had already loved the cartoon a whole bunch. And then we go see Ghostbusters 2 in the theater. And like, that just solidifies it. Between those three things, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I remember that watching Ghostbusters 2 in the movie theater, I don't even remember what part was happening, but you know, my small child brain was just exploding because I'm watching cinematic masterpiece happen like on the screen ahead of me. And I turned to my mother is fast asleep. And I just remember thinking like, I remember being in shock. I'm like, how are you missing this? This is exciting and loud and it's Ghostbusters. And she's fast asleep. And like, skip forward to now. And though I'm not a parent, I have many friends that are parents that are like, you know what? You go to the movie theater. The kids are paying attention. It's dark. I'm taking 5 minutes to close my eyes. Like, now I get it. Now I get it that you've got a mother of two kids. She's like, big one, watch the little one, watch the big one. I'm closing my eyes for 5 seconds. But I just remember being like, how do you have your eyes closed? Like,
so insulted.
You are missing this. How are you missing this? But yes. So just from there. And like I said, my brother loved it. And of course, growing up, anything that Brian loved, I loved. It was just instinct. If he liked it, well, then it's super cool. And I like it. Of course, I like Ghostbusters. But then it just carried on. And again, the cartoon I watched well into like its full run. I think it went to either 90 or 91. And toward the end, it kind of got a little bit weird because it became like Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters. But like the first few seasons of the Real Ghostbusters, like I'd watch it, you know, every Saturday morning or after school or whenever it came on. But something just clicked. And for me, it really tapped into what I liked about horror, because it was movies like Ghostbusters. It was movies like Monster Squad, where it's like, that's the stuff I'm allowed to watch. I technically kind of got Stockholm syndromed into horror movies again, because of my brother. He had a door sized Freddy Krueger poster on his door, and the way that my bed was and the way that our rooms were, I slept with my door open. So the last thing I saw before I went to sleep every night was this door size Freddy Krueger poster. And it was petrifying. And then it just stopped being scary. And then I'm like, well, now I want to see the movies. And while he showed me the original, everything else really, it was what's coming on TV on a Sunday afternoon, like the heavily edited things that showed up on cable. Mm-hmm. So that's where I saw all the franchise stuff. I saw Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th. And like, that was what I was allowed to consume. I had kind of strict parents with, if it's PG-13 and you're 12, you're not watching it.
Oh, wow.
So any of that stuff, I don't know, like, it just, I guess it started with things like Ghostbusters and Monster Squad. it started because it was funny. It mm-hmm. was a little bit scary. And then I could kind of progress. I mean, I guess it's what the whole concept of this is, where it's like the starter stuff. Like, this is where you start and you can build into loving yeah. the genre more and more. But it definitely, yeah, I think the funny really helped with, it wasn't so scary. And even at the parts where, okay, it's a little scary in the beginning with the librarian turning into that purple spirit, and, you know, Gozer's can be a little bit scary, but I can fall back on, well, Bill Murray is super funny. Dan Aykroyd mm-hmm. is super funny. I've loved Egon from day one, kind of thing. So it really just, it made it a lot easier to consume. And then, yeah, it kind of just, I never stopped. I never stopped. And like I said, the sequel comes out, and for me, the sequel, I love it, you know, almost as much as I love the original, and I never stopped. And again, that's the franchise that has, I've probably spent the most money on as far as like merchandise and things like that. And, sure. and I'm also very lucky because my friends and family know how much I love Ghostbusters. So I am gifted many Ghostbuster things and posters and toys and cups and books. And if somebody socks, my niece and nephew got me a pack of like different pack of Ghostbuster socks. Like, if you see the Ghostbusters emblem on it, sure. Yeah. No, I like it. Even if I have it, I'm like, sweet. Now I have two of them. So.
Jackie, aww. Do you have like full cosplay? Like, do you have like the jumpsuit and the energy pack and all of that?
Oh, that's a cool question.
I don't. I have never done the cosplay thing. I have had the idea that I wanted to dress up like Dana, like after she goes full Zool.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like that would be kind of fun. Although it's one of those things where I'm like, I kind of want to like make the costume. Like, I kind of want to sew the costume, because some of the things I've seen, I don't remember if Spirit Halloween has one or not, or if I had seen it on somewhere on Amazon, but it's like, I don't want to pay $75 for your cheaply made costume. Like, I kind of want to like, I want to do it right. But then I remember that I don't know how to use a sewing machine. So it always kind of holds me back there. But it's one of those things that I would love to do. Like, I've never owned a jumpsuit. I've never owned a proton pack. Like, I've never gone into the cosplay realm of my fandom.
Sure. So like, you know, the conventions that I've been to, not even the horror ones, just like regular comic book, like regular, like San Diego Comic-Con, you see at least 2 to 3 Ghostbuster troops like walking by. My favorite so far was like, it was a family, and like the kids were the Ghostbusters, and then like dad was Slimer and mom was like the Marshmallow Man. I was, you know, because it's, you know, it's for the kids, but right. I just thought that it would be like, that's the one thing that sticks out with me, because I also watched the cartoon. I wasn't an avid watcher of the cartoon, but when it was on, I would just, you know, watch it. And I always wanted the one like movie memorabilia thing. And I think like, as people who love film, you know, we always have like that elusive prop that we would just love to have in our media room, right? Mine would be, and please forgive me if I don't say what it is correctly, but it's the trap. It's the,
yeah, the trap.
The trap. Oh, yeah, thank yeah. you. It's the trap that, because yeah. I'm just like, I just think that thing just looks so cool. It would be like the trap, and then like a couple other fun movie things. Like, you know, the Winifred's book from Hocus Pocus.
But
the trap, I've always like wanted to have one, or like have like Lego come out with, you know, like adult Lego version where you can make your own trap. Like, that's what I really want.
I'm sure somebody's done that. I remember being a kid, because definitely the real Ghostbusters, I remember that being on. I remember having some toys from it, like some of the figures. We didn't have like the other kids, you know, richer children, you know, or whatever, parents, you know, kids who had parents who really loved them, I guess. No, had like the, you know, they came out. I don't know if it was connected to the real Ghostbusters or if it was part of the first film or the second film. Cause I mean, this had to be the mid well, early 90s, 91, 92, 93, where they had like the traps and the guns and the packs. They were toys, so they weren't like incredibly detailed. But I remember kids like playing Ghostbusters, or we'd meet up with, you know, other, you know, children in the neighborhood who had those things. And I remember it was like one of those, the trap had a, like a pressure, you know, like a air, you like step on it, it would pop open, you know, but it was like plastic tubing, you know, it was super cute. I remember people having those as kids, but I know you mean, Joe, you want like a screen accurate.
Yeah. Like, of it. I mean, like, it doesn't have to be made of any like metal or anything, but I want it to look like, I want like some prop person on Etsy, again, right there with you, Jackie, with Etsy, prop person on Etsy to do that. Like, I have a whole idea of like the type, like, you know, I love like movie swords, right? So, you know, like someone putting like the Game of Thrones swords, or like the Lord of the Rings type swords, or even to be quite honest, even oh my God, what's his name? Kill Bill. What's his name? The
sword. Hattori Hanzo.
Yes, the Hattori Hanzo Kill Bill sword, you know. So, but yeah, like Ghostbusters, the trap has always been at the top of that list for me.
I love that. So I am curious just to talk a little bit about the, you know, the actual film. There's a Overthinking Ghostbusters. There's a website I guess it's like a multi-page, like a research paper by Adam Bertocci, kind of covers all sorts of things, you know, gender, religion, politics, the hero's journey. There's another page on Schmoop, Ghostbusters analysis, that talks about order versus chaos and the church. And again, wow, the hero's journey, which I'm starting to think, Joe, we really should have been just called Overthinking Horror. You know, it would have made our lives so much easier, like for this show. And then we could have just done, you know, Overthinking Nightmare on Elm Street, Overthinking the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We wouldn't have to worry about coming up with clever titles. Anyways, not the point. My point was, why Ghostbusters? Like, what keeps you watching it again and again, Jackie? Because, okay, like, full disclosure, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about this before in the past, and I think even we've discussed this, I didn't really get an appreciation for Ghostbusters until the Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, and
Leslie Jones.
Leslie Jones.
Wow, Joshua.
It was coming. Listen, first of all, it's
wow.
It's super early.
It is super. It was coming. I said Jones. I knew it was there. Like, give me a second. Again, Joe gets to be brain fried because his work's been busy. But you know, the fact I've read like 5,000 pages of very boring dry text this week, my brain is super fried.
Here's the thing.
Leslie Jones.
Hold on. First of all, hashtag say their names. Say their names. And two, you get to live with the voice in your head that's reading this text. I had to deal with, like, you know, hundreds of people at my work.
We all have it hard.
Hate
Effie.
People. Yes.
We all.
Effie, we all got pain. Is that what you're saying? Wow. Wow. Dream Girls. Wow.
But I'm saying it to
you. Do you remember their character names,
me.
Joshua, in Dream Girls?
Effie. Effie's the star. Beyonce robbed Jennifer Hudson. I will continue to say that. They totally screwed over Effie's
Jennifer Hudson wins the Academy Award for that.
As supporting and not lead actress.
Oh, well, that's okay. Well,
sorry, Dreamgirls is Effie's story. Anyways, we can't have this conversation again on this show, but not the point. The point is that I kind of fell in love with Ghostbusters after that. Cause like as a kid, like I remember being on, there were a lot of men in it, which, you know, is always going to be a problem for me. But I love, you know, I remember watching because I loved Little Shop of Horrors. And so Rick Moranis being in it was a big draw, even though he plays like in the 80s, Rick Moranis just played the same person in all his movies. because, yeah, like it's the same in Ghostbusters and in, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. you know, so I got, you know, I bought, like, I got the Ghostbusters 1 and 2 little cool Blu-ray pack that they released. I think I got this. I bought this. I think with the Blu-ray for the reboot. So I know that breaks people's hearts and all of that. I remember seeing it like as a kid and like, yeah, I like the scary stuff. And I love the, you know, the big creepy, you know, demon dogs and, you know, the voice. I love the voice of Gozer. And, you know, a lot of the stuff, but it wasn't something that like I immediately like had like this enduring love for. So I'm just curious what keeps like you coming back to it, Jackie, or like what about the story like resonates that just, you know, keeps you like, yeah, I love this movie.
I mean, that's the, like, I don't know how to put that one into words. Like what makes, cool. You know, it's like, what makes it your, it's. I don't know. There's an element of comfort. Like that's like the cozy blanket, cozy drink on a rainy day thing. Like
I love
that's
that.
Just, that is just a comfort movie. There's something about, you know, thinking about it, like there's almost like, I don't know, maybe I'll throw this little narcissistic tidbit out of it. Like it's the thing where it's like, I watch Ghostbusters and there's, Ghostbusters is, it's a little bit spooky. It's funny. It's lighthearted. And it's one of those things where it's like, those are the elements that I want to take. And like, that's me. Like, yeah. I want to be spooky and funny and like lighthearted. And I want to be that comfort. Like, and I don't know, maybe there's something about it. And that's why, I mean, legit, like I know, oh, that's my favorite movie. Like people say that's my favorite movie, like legitimately. Ghostbusters is my number one desert island all-time favorite movie. Like this is a movie that I could legitimately, every other movie in the world disappears and I have this movie every day for the rest of my life. Perfectly fine. Like I am perfectly content. If I can only watch one movie forever, it's going to be Ghostbusters. So yeah, this is just, it's comfort. It's everything that I like in a movie. It's the qualities that like, I truly, and it's sad because like looking back now, Bill Murray's character of Venkman, he's such a dick.
Yeah.
Like, there's part of me that's like I remember being younger and being like, okay, I have to think of like funny things to say ahead of time. If the situation arises, like I'll have a funny quip like Bill Murray had in the movie, you know, like I wanted to have something happened where someone will be kind of shitty to me and then walk away and I'll be like, I'm going to miss him. I'm going to send him flowers. Like I wanted to have those moments where I could be Peter Venkman-esque. Like I remember wanting to kind of emulate him. And again, you know, when you're a teenager, you don't realize what a douchebag he is, or maybe you do. And I just thought he was super cool. And he's also Bill Murray. And I grew up watching other Bill Murray movies. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just like, I want to be cool like him. So that's a weird long roundabout way to explain why I like the movie, but I think I will go back to the key point of there's just something about like sitting down to watching that is me coming home. And I know they say you can never go home again, and that is true, but this is the home that never changes. So when things are chaotic, when I just need comfort, when I need that stable same, and you know, I go to Ghostbusters.
See, I love that. And, you know, and that's kind of the point of like doing this like series of films is like, yeah, I'm not truly interested in like overcomplicating Ghostbusters or trying to have like, you know, what is the significance? I mean, obviously 1984, like the year it came out, that was very significant because of the Orwell book. There was a lot of people paying attention to like what kind of content we were creating. And, you know, this has a lot of tension in it about exactly, you know, what we were kind of talking about earlier, like politics and the church and belief and, you know, order versus chaos. And there are a lot of scenes where, you know, like, I think like, I mean, I'm horrified at the beginning with the library where like all the books are getting thrown around out of, I'm like, ah, you know, and that just hints at all the chaos to come, you know, it's such a great foreshadowing, you know, but yeah, I think the main point of this is like, yeah, why those of us who, you know, are big horror fans and, you know, the people that we're, you know, interviewing and talking to throughout these, this series of episodes, it's like, yeah, like we're like our love of the spooky comes, you know, starts in like sort of these innocent places, you know, and in these, you know, that it's just something, I agree. Like, it's hard. Like, when people ask me, like, about, you know, my love of, like, Beetlejuice or Little Shop of Horrors, like, yeah, it is hard to exactly put into words, except exactly that. Like, I'm having a shitty day, and you know what I can count on? That movie is going to just make me feel good, you know, and I'll be able to quote it and say all the lines from it and laugh about it and, like, have a memory, have several memories, because I've got lots of parts of my life that, you know, are tied to watches of you know, some of these comfort watch, kiddie, quote unquote, gateway horror films. So I actually really, really, really love that you call it, like, you, like, it's a home. That's a really sweet and kind of profound thing that I think kind of can get missed in, you know, it's just a movie, you know, but it's not. I mean, it's, you know, it's the way we survive so many things, or the way we conjure memory or get in touch with, you know, the past in a way that is so tangible. So I really love that. And I like having these conversations because everybody, you know, has that kind of those sorts of vibes and feelings. Yay. Sorry. That was really lovely. So now I'm just like warm fuzzies for like Ghostbusters. Doesn't a ghost give somebody a blowjob in this movie? Just to
bring it back. Dan Aykroyd fantasizes about the ghost blowjob, which completely went over my head as a kid.
Yeah, I remember.
I didn't pick up on until I was a little bit older.
Yeah, I saw it on TV and they always edited that out. Because again, I've talked about before, like the movie matinee on Saturdays, you know, 12, mm-hmm. 2, and 4. And a lot of times Ghostbusters would get played in that. But it was edited to fucking back, you know. So like I had no idea about that kind of stuff until I was much older and saw like a DVD copy. I was like, what is happening? that was just me trying to get away from that warm, fuzzy feeling because gross.
Yeah. let's keep it on brand. Let's keep it on brand. Dirty and racist.
Oh, I know. Gosh, I'm going to have like a whole like therapy session. Like, am I a racist? Fuck. God damn, you know, and I love Leslie Jones. That's so sad. Anyways, not the point. We're not going to get bogged down in that right now. I'm not going to therapize my friends. That's not right. I do, you know, this is another movie that could have made me gay. I don't know. You know, cause Dana's like diaphanous, like fabric dress we were talking about earlier. I think that's where I get my love of that. I love a floating kind of dress, you know, just a swirl of fabric. It's just so lovely, Joe. Don't you agree?
Yeah, you love anything where you can like you can you love anything where you can like, you know, Stevie Nicks twirl to Rhiannon in the background.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, that's exactly it. Shit. Maybe we did find my route. Now I can fix it, right? Now I can go to conversion. No, I'm kidding. That's terrible. And gross. All right. Well, any last thoughts on Ghostbusters? I did want to ask Jackie what you thought of Afterlife, because I know your opinion on the reboot.
I haven't seen Afterlife yet. So
Okay, so you know what? There's no spoilers here.
Okay.
I will say that for someone that feels the way that I feel about the original Ghostbusters franchise, this was a big nostalgic hug. This I think was very much the love letter to the people like me. And it had a ton of like, hey, remember this? And like, oh, look at this little Easter egg. With a sweet story that I think is in line tone-wise with the other films. There are things that are predictable. I mean, it was, I am very lucky. Again, my friends know how I feel about this. That since the pandemic has started, I've been to the theater once and it was to see Afterlife and I haven't gone back since.
Wow.
And not so much out of fear of anything. It's just, honestly, like the pandemic happened and I was like, oh, I can just watch these movies on my couch. And I'm like, yeah, I'll be a homebody and just enjoy it from the comfort of my own home.
Yeah. Parties, invite friends over.
Yeah. You know. And honestly, like not too much has come out where I'm like, I have to see it instantly. I'm perfectly cool avoiding spoilers on the internet and just waiting. And then, oh, look, it's streaming on one of the 10,000 streaming services that I have. And again, then comfort of my own home to watch it. But this was one that I said that I wanted to go see it. And so many of my friends know how I feel about it. And it was, I think we ended up like almost an entire row of us. Like, wow. I think there was like 12 or 13 of us that went, because I literally said, guys, I'm going to see Ghostbusters in the movie. Does anybody want to come with? And so many of my friends chimed in with abso-fucking-lutely. And so, yeah, a shit ton of us went, and I cried so many times. just from like, you know, sentimental moments that happen in the movie to just, I don't know, like just seeing it on screen and just having like, this is so hokey and I don't care, but like having essentially like another generation see my Ghostbusters. And I don't mean to make that like shade against the 2016 Ghostbusters, because I know that like so many people saw that and did enjoy it. And speaking to Marissa, who has two young daughters, like they got to see like the female Ghostbusters was so empowering to them. Like they got to see role models in a franchise that they loved, you know, that Marissa had loved. And so I don't want to say that and take away from what that did. But again, this is, that is in a completely separate universe. That Ghostbusters really doesn't have anything to do with this Ghostbusters, which is one of my reasons why I avoided it. I don't speak badly of it because I've never seen it. So I'm not going to sit here and talk shit on a movie I've never seen. I'm perfectly happy just having it live out there, out of my existence. But for Afterlife, just to have that experience with all of my friends, it was very emotional and it was hysterical because I'm sitting there crying like nonstop. And the end, there's a very emotional moment and Marissa teared up a bit. And what was funny was her family was with us and her youngest kind of made fun of Marissa for crying, you know, at this movie. And then when the credits were rolling and everything, she was like, hey, I'm going to go down and see if Aunt Jackie's okay. She's been crying. And she literally came up and gave me a big hug. Gosh. And Marissa was like, dude, like you made fun of me. She's like, yeah, but Aunt Jackie's crying. I'm going to go give Aunt Jackie a hug. Because like, I mean, Marissa and I can say the same thing to her kids and they will roll their eyes at her, but high five me because that's what cool Aunt Jackie is for. Like,
I love that.
But yeah. But I enjoyed Afterlife. It wasn't the greatest thing. I wasn't expecting like to be swept off my feet by the movie, but I think it certainly delivered. Like I said, so much nostalgia, so much of, hey, remember this. With a sweet story on top of it. So I left the theater happy. I nitpicked a couple things that would spoil it. So I'm not going to say anything, but honestly, again, I'm like, I'm okay. Because for the longest time they talked about a Ghostbusters Part 3.
Right.
And I was perfectly happy with 1 and 2. And then in the early 2000s, they came out with a Ghostbusters video game that was almost kind of slightly like a little bit of a Part 3. And I'm like, that's all I need. Like, I truly was like, my franchise can be 1 and 2 and that's it. Like, I don't need any more. Like in my brain, in Part 2, they save New York City again and all is right with the world. The end, fade to black. I'm the happy camper. I truly didn't need Afterlife. I didn't need anything more, but the fact that they gave it to me and it was a decent movie. Like, I'm okay with that.
I love that. I enjoyed it too. I thought it was a lot of fun, especially again, because I had sort of recontextualized Ghostbusters. You know, Jeffrey loves Paul Rudd. So of course we had to see it because, you know, the Rudd was in it. But I enjoyed it. And I think, I mean, as much as I really did enjoy the 2016 or whatever year that was, you know, the female Ghostbusters, just because I really love those actresses and I enjoyed it. It never made sense to me that they didn't make like Kate McKinnon's character related to Spangler. Is that Egon? You know, or find a way to tie it in. It just, they could have really, you know, we talked about this with Matt Kelly when we discussed that way, way, way back in the day. You know, he had a great idea for how they could have like really easily improved, you know, and connected it to the main story. And maybe fans would have embraced it a little bit more, but again, you know, I love it because, you know, I'm a misandrist. So I love all the women that are in it. I love a woman like fronted, like, you know, all of that. But yeah, to get back to Afterlife, I thought it was a lot of fun and a really great follow up for a franchise that I didn't love since I was a kid. You know, I had to kind of reevaluate it as, you know, as an adult. And so, yeah, I found it delightful, you know, and, you know, and fun again. Like it was like a fun ride. So
I mean, yay. It truly is. Like you, again, like you mentioned that overthinking Ghostbusters. Yeah. You can absolutely overthink Ghostbusters. You can overthink anything.
Oh yeah.
Or you can kind of, you can absolutely take it at face value and see what it is. It's, you know, like when original Ghostbusters, you have scientists that have been kicked out of their university because of their theories and because of their, you know, what they're trying to prove. And they're going to go into a ghost busting business. That's pretty damn silly. You know, it's one of those things where like, let's take it for what it is. Like here's a bunch of, you know, 30 somethings going to go bust ghosts. They're going to go capture ghosts and put them in a containment unit. And
but in the end, they're right, you know? And so again, like they're proven right throughout the film and throughout the series. And you think about that now in our world where it's like, yeah, people that we have trusted for some reason all these years as scientists are telling us things, you know, that they're like, we should be worried about these things. These are true things that are coming. We're on the, you know, crux of an apocalypse. And we're like, what do you know? Like, have you been on Google? I've been on Google. I've been in Reddit. I know the truth. And we're like throwing out these people, you know, for fear mongering or for like asking us to be a little bit more responsible with the way that we, you know, do things, and we can't have it. So I feel like, you know, there's like real life, like even in Ghostbusters, which is, like what you're saying, like this kind of silly fun romp about, you know, scientists chasing ghosts, chasing, you know, things that they're trying to prove are real. We see echoes of the world we live in even today, you know, from then and up till today. So it's kind of, there is real meaning in what we make. So even if it's just a fun ghost movie. So Jackie, thank you so much. As always, you're such a pleasure. Always. I do. You know, I keep saying, I've said it to everybody lately, like this fucking country is too damn big. Like I hate that it's like a 6-hour flight to get over to see you. You know, I wish I could just hop in a car or hop on a bus or whatever and be there in an hour so I could visit. I wish we were a smaller landmass because so many people I love live where you live instead of where I live. And I can't force you all to move here. that's life. But thank you so much for discussing Ghostbusters with us and sharing your love for it. Again, it just makes me love it even more, you know, for somebody who did it, you know, for many, many years was like, I don't know. Now I like really see like a whole new vision.
Well, you know what? Very, very recently, a couple of my friends, one of my friends, she had never seen one or two, and my other friend had never seen two. And I was like, well, let's have a Ghostbusters day. Let's watch it. And, you know, we sit down, we have a little mini movie marathon, we watch one and two. And, you know, AJ turns to Jerry and he's like, so did you love it? And she's like, yeah, they were good. Like they were fun. And he's like, you're going to go break Jackie's heart. And I was like, look, I said, I never, like me showing Ghostbusters to anybody is never love what I love. It's right. Here's one of my all-time favorite movie. Like, let me just share that with you. You don't have to love it. You don't even have to like it. Please just have the experience of me sharing my number one all-time favorite movie, sharing it with you. Like, that's just, let me just, this is an extension of my friendship. Here's a little movie love. Share this thing that I love. And yeah, like I said, whenever I show it to people, I don't expect anybody to feel about the way that I feel because everybody's different and my history with it is different. But I'm like, just let me share this experience with you and let's have fun. And everybody I've done that with, nobody has disliked it happily. Everybody's just been like, that was fun, you know, a little bit dated, but that was fun. So that's really all I ever want. So like the fact that you, like, you know, to watch it again. And I'm so, so thankful to have me on and to talk about this and let me gush about the movie. So thank you both very much.
Oh, I love that. And that's the thing. People learn stuff about us, you know, when they see, you know, it's like this allows you a little closer to me. You know, this is something I really love and cherish. And, you know, that's the beauty of this. Ah, well, thank you so much. Again, that is Jersey Ghouls, and you're at Jersey Ghouls on all the stuff, right? Twitter, yes. Instagram, all the things, yep. And obviously wherever you find podcasts, and then at The List We Missed. Is that also, or
same.
Is it just?
Yep. Okay, yeah. With The List We Missed, we are on Facebook and Instagram as The List We Missed, and the same thing with Jersey Ghouls and The List We Missed. If your favorite podcasting app, you're going to find us there.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you again for being here. Joe, as always, my intrepid, friend that I'm dragging along with this. Good night.
Good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.